This is BVK for Ocean City Tourism, OCMD streaming audio. On March 11th, 2024, the title of the spot is STSA Leisure Summer. This is a 30-second composite stereo streaming audio mix.
Get away with friends to the laid-back Maryland coast, where you can catch up while casting off and hang 10 while hanging out, where a day on board is never boring. Full throttle is half the fun. Where you can sink a putt, raise a glass, and there's always room for one more round. Ocean City, Maryland. Somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
There's a moment you realize you're ready for what's next in your career. Maybe it's when you're trying a new scone recipe and think, I could open a cafe. Or maybe you're helping a coworker and say, I could teach a course on this. Whatever your moment is, it's never too early to plan for a career that lives longer. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. For skills training, resume tips, and job listings, visit aarp.org/work.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang it in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Difficult conversations are worth having. This is one with William A. Adams, a tech executive from Microsoft and a black man. We're going to talk about a number of topics on this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. Funny, I always go into these trying to give people a little bit of space to give context, because you're a technologist, you've worked at vendor companies that we all know, and now you're involved in thinking about, you know, diversity and equity and inclusion in this space. Give me your version of kind of your career arc and how you ended up where you're at now.
Yeah, well, get your popcorn. So I'm 57. I've been in tech my whole life. I started programming when I was 12 on a Commodore PET, and by 1984, my brother and I started a company in the Silicon Valley, UC Berkeley, called Atomation. That was kind of the beginning of the professional career in tech, and we did custom software. It was on platforms that were not Microsoft, so it was we were heavy into the next computers. You know, help Steve Jobs land some big sales. But that was a very small pond, you know. And then eventually I went through a couple of other things, and eventually I ended up at Microsoft in 1998 to work on this thing called XML. And I was, I've always been a developer. I was a dev manager in that team. ran that for a few years, created some interesting things like soap.
If you've ever heard of that.
Or this other thing that's seems to be popular still called system.link, which is how it's called language integrated query, which is how we interact with databases and do stuff. And then I jumped off in 2005 or six. I joined a group called Engineering Excellence, which was about training our engineers how to be better engineers. Because that was at the time where we were suffering from internet scale viruses and worms and whatnot, you know. And I thought, well, teaching engineers how to do better engineering is probably a worthwhile thing. So I jumped into that. I lived in India for about 3 years, 2006 to 2009. I set up Engineering Excellence there, trained up about 1,000 engineers over those 3 years in a particular way. And then I came back in 2010 to help create the first services on Azure, which was this thing called Access Control Service and Service Bus. And then 2015, I was kind of looking around of what's a big challenge, what's a big business challenge. And I connected with one of our CVPs, corporate vice presidents, who said, oh, there's this diversity thing. And I thought, okay, let me go jump on that grenade. And, I looked around the company. I saw that we were doing a lot of, what I would call pipeline stuff, which is K through 12 programs. And, you know, they're all feel good programs, spending millions of dollars, but we weren't doing a heck of a lot to actually hire women and minorities. So we were feeding the pipe, but we weren't consuming the pipe. And the problem was the way we consume talent is we go to colleges and universities and we go to industry. So colleges and universities, like a CS degree, classic sort of stuff. And the industry is 10 years of experience, you know. So the people you're looking for are neither of those, right? They're people who probably have STEM degrees, but they're in different fields. They didn't go to the top 15 schools. They're in different careers already, and they've decided to switch to tech. But you don't have a way of looking at their resume, because you say, well, you don't have a CS degree, you're not from one of these schools, you don't have 10 years of experience, in the circular bin you go. So what was missing there was what we now call an apprenticeship program, which is 3 months where we train you up for a month to make sure you can work in the Microsoft way. And then you're in a team, just like a college intern would be, and you're writing code and doing whatever, project management, whatever it is. And then at the end of that time, they get to decide whether they're going to hire you or not. And then they do or they don't, right? So this has been the arc of my career. I started out mostly self-taught. I went to UC Berkeley, electrical engineering, computer science, where, again, they don't really teach you that much, because at that time in the 80s, programming was just something you did on, you know, to make the hardware work, yeah. Right? It wasn't like, I mean, it said computer science, but it was like, you know, the guy who created Pascal was the lecturer and stuff like that. So that's the arc of my career. And now I'm at this phase, which is, okay, I've had 35 years of tech-ness. How am I going to help my tribe? Or am I just going to retire and go off to sit on a beach and say, well, I've done good. You know, it's like, no, I'm going to help my tribe. So that's where
I'm
at now.
I'm going to ask, because I like the way you just described it. How do you describe your tribe? What's the definition you're applying to that?
That's an interesting question. And there's a process of discovery I'm going through to exactly define that. Because you would think, oh, it's Black people. It's like, which Black people? The rich ones that are going to Stanford or the poor ones that are failing out of the high schools in Atlanta? I mean, who are you talking about here? Am I going to help? What am I going to do for Black farmers, you know, who are losing their land at a fast clip? So I'm in the process of discovering who my tribe is. And for me, it's really interesting because, you know, I'm Black. I identify as Black. I grew up Black and the world treats me as Black. But I grew up in a white world. So, you know, at Microsoft, for example, I've been there 24 years. And until recently, until the last 4 or 5 years, the number of people I interacted with who were Black, I could count on one hand, you know, and they were never in my org. I mean, it was usually, oh, you're Black too, you know, and they're off doing whatever they're doing somewhere else. So I grew up in a white world, and I grew up as an engineer in a white world. So my tribe is, well, is it just engineers, but they're Black, or is it, you know? So it's a process of discovery, but loosely speaking, it's melanin-enhanced people who find tech interesting and want to pursue careers in tech.
What a fantastic engineer answer, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, that's the best I can do.
So using that as context, I'm going to tell you, my interest in this topic, you know, started... It starts the summer of 2020, as I'm looking at the, you know, what's happened in the George Floyd, the pushback, the noise, the answer, the calls, the all the, however you want to describe it. And I looked at it and said, yeah, I should think about this more. I have realizations and I should think about this more. I'm a white man in technology, right? And I also I always describe it as I'm also a full-throated capitalist, right? I like building businesses and I like being competitive, finding competitive advantage. And my answer has thought on this has always been the, well, you know, if I don't look enough like my customers, if I don't understand enough about my customers, I am missing out on a segment of the market. I would like to serve more customers. The customers don't all look like me. They're not all white men. So there's many dimensions to this, right? There's the, I need to understand, think more about what it's like to be a woman. I need to understand what it's more like to be, you know, a person of color. Like, I need to think about these things because I like selling products and services to them, right? Like, literally, it's just this very practical kind of answer of, I'd like to look at it that way. So I've tried to invest time and I look around our industry and I say, all right, it looks a lot like me. And I do a research study every quarter to sort of to count that, because like a good engineer, I know that we can't manage what we don't measure. So thus the context for this conversation. I think my first kind of question is one of those ones that, like, you know, I it's listed literally on the kind of podcast pitch. You know, what's the opening question is, well, what is the most effective thing businesses can do to hire more? If you're describing that we're trying to build the pipe, but we're not hiring enough of these people, well, what is the thing we can do to start hiring people of color?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting catch, because I'll tell you and I'm just being brutally honest here. The process that companies like the one I've been in for the last 24 years typically does is a George Floyd incident happens. We wind up the HBCU train. We run on out to the HBCUs, literally load up the bus and hire 40 people and call it a day. It's guilt hiring. And we don't even care what jobs we put them in. And within a year, they're all gone. This is common, right? You don't do it like that.
Okay. Okay. Don't do that.
You don't do it like that. Now, I'll give you a story of something that I did, and we can talk about Africa, but in Atlanta, the first thing I did was I went out and had we created a document. I sent someone to go and do interviews. We interviewed community members. We interviewed people who were at Microsoft. We interviewed people who were just local influencers, politicians, rap artists. And the question was, who are you? What are your aspirations? What do you care about? When you go into communities, you know, Black communities, Hispanic communities, whatever, they want you to know that you're invested in their community. And you're not just coming in to helicopter hire out of their community. Because what you're doing when you hire the best and the brightest and you take them away is you're decimating the brain trust of that community, right? It's like, oh, we got your top 100 people. It's like, well, who's going to help us now? Right. You took them off to Redmond. And now, you know, who's going to help us figure out our local problems? So one of the things I think is ideal is you have to meet people where they are. And this is not easy for every company, particularly smaller and medium sized companies. But meeting people where they are, showing that you care about their community and you want to invest in the community, showing up as an imperialist power, not the best thing. Right. And I'll say this for. We went into Africa in the last, 5 years, 2017-18. I took a trip to Nigeria and Kenya, and we were like, all right, we're going to create a development center here, right, in Africa. We have zero engineering in Africa, if you can believe that. And the thing that I said to in that context was exactly what I just said, which is we're not going to follow a brain drain strategy here. If you're going to hire, you have to hire and keep them here, right? If they want to stay here, right? And now we're up to, I think, 650 or more employees between Kenya and Africa. And this is just in 4 or 5 years. And it was explicitly this. I care about the community there. And by bringing high-tech jobs to there, I'm enhancing their community without taking their brain trust away, right? COVID helped this, actually, because it accelerated the whole, hey, you can work from anywhere. It's like, yes, therefore, stop trying to brain drain these communities. So I think a key is to have a culture within your company that says, I care about the community that these people are coming from. That's the first thing. You can't go in and just say, I'm going to get my checkboxes, because that's the path to failure. You know, no one ever succeeds at that. So that's the first thing, because people know it. You know, you can smell it when someone's just in it for themselves. And the second thing, I know this is making it long-winded, but the second thing is, it's about culture change within your company as much as it is about anything having to do with the candidates you're trying to hire, right? The biggest thing that the LEAP program did was change the culture around hiring for our company. We're now aware of how to look at people differently. And we're now more aware as to how to listen to their perspectives, because it's all about inclusion at the end of the day. It's not about DNA diversity. It's about including different perspectives. And if you can't listen and know how to incorporate those perspectives and be truly inclusive, you'll fail. So you need to learn how to be inclusive, because, again, people will smell it when you're just like, well, we needed 50 blacks and we got them. Now act like us.
Right.
Right. No one wants that. Right. That's how you fail, is by just it's the same thing with what we did with women. It's like, come on in. Now learn to wear pants. You know, that's how you fail. So you have to be inclusive. You have to listen. You have to be open. Right.
So I'm going to sort of, in a way, simplifying, like, what's the biggest mistake that well-intentioned guys like me make? Like, what are we doing that is screwing up the process? When I'm sitting down talking to somebody and considering hiring, like, what am I doing wrong that I may not even be aware of?
Well, that's another thing, is in the hiring process, assuming you're taking care of those other things, like, we've got the culture and, you know, we're not trying to brain drain. Now, what am I doing in hiring? Well, you're not hiring. Okay. You're doing whiteboard interviews, right?
Okay.
In tech, and it's common. You're doing whiteboard interviews. Well, is that the best way to figure out how someone problem solves? Maybe they didn't grow up with that whole way of learning. Maybe to problem solve, you need to ask different kinds of questions. Maybe you need to suss out, because someone came from industry, a different industry. What I really care about is their collaborative capabilities. So let me ask them about, give them a question related to how they collaborate, because I can teach them how to code, assuming they already know how to basically code or do whatever the thing is. Assuming that's okay, you don't keep hammering on that. It's like, you got 7 interviews and they're all whiteboard interviews. It's like, did anyone bother to step back and say, hey, what was the situation in which you had to collaborate with someone or interact with a customer, and what did you do? Right. Because you have to look at, you have to look deeper into, what are they bringing to the table, and were they good at that? You were a barista. Were you a good barista? How did you handle this customer interaction? Right. You have to ask that, because if all you do is hammer them with questions that let you know that they're not like you, then all you're going to find out is that they're not like you. So you need to find out, who are they and what are they good at? Right.
Right.
So that's the mistake we make, is we don't listen to who they are. All we do is we're trying to figure out, are they like us? Right. And I'll say it succinctly as, we're trying to see whether they meet the bar rather than fit within our net, right? When you're trying to be inclusive, you're casting a wide net. You're trying to be including people. When you set a bar, the elusive bar, all you're doing is trying to exclude people, right? So you have to flip that script and say, I'm not trying to set a bar. I'm trying to cast a net.
All right. And I want to, so then I want to revisit culture because, you know, you said, assuming you get that stuff all right. Well, I'm actually generally assuming we probably haven't.
So, yeah. You know, I'm being generous there, right?
Yeah. And in fact, I think it's important to talk about hiring because that's something that we think about, but what are we screwing up on the culture stuff? Particularly again, if I'm thinking about these small orgs, right? You know, if I'm an org that has 20 or 30 people, you know, HR is a part-time job, right? Like that's not
for somebody, yeah.
Right, for somebody. what are we getting wrong here, even philosophically or tactically? What are we getting wrong in culture?
Yeah, that's a hard one, right? Because culture is very visceral and very much who am I? Especially with a smaller organization, right? It's like 20, 30 people. You're probably in the same town, and that town has a culture and it's got a certain population, and you may not see any Black people, right?
Yeah.
So how are you going to hire a Black person in a place where they don't exist, right? And you may have attitudes towards women or towards neurodiversity or towards LGBTQ or whatever, right? You have that culture within that community. And it's hard to say, well, we're going to throw off our culture. It's like, So it's really an evolved and aware emotional maturity, right, that the organization has to have. You can't fake it, right? So really, is the organization emotionally mature enough to have this kind of inclusive conversation? And then is the local population even there, right? So I don't know. It's not an easy, there's no easy answer there other than you have to have the emotional maturity. Now, a gigantic place like Microsoft, there's enough people who have the emotional maturity that you can make some inroads. But culturally, from the top down, we have our limitations. That's it. You have to have the emotional maturity. You have to be able to look at the problem straight on. You have to look at George Floyd and not flinch and say, what the hell? What are we going to do different? Right.
Right.
And it can get weird, though, because then you're like, well, who has a Black friend? You know, let's bring him in to lunch and ask him questions so he can become woke. That's a weird conversation.
And I would think it's an unwelcome one. I mean, it is
unwelcome because I'll tell you, because I've had these conversations. And what I'll tell you, if you came to me and you said, William, you know, I want to hear about your experience, I would tell you, we can't have that conversation until you can examine why your tribe is so murderous towards my tribe and get naked like me so that we can have that naked conversation. Because for me, it feels like you're observing me as a monkey in the zoo. You're going to come in. I'm going to tell you all my stuff. And then you're going to walk away. It's like, oh, thank you. That was a good conversation. Why would I invest in that? Right? Why would I put my emotions out there to make myself bare like that when you're not in a state to actually do anything? So what I tell people who want to have that conversation, and this is what, you know, if you're getting right down to the brass tacks of it, it's like, you have to be willing to get naked in that conversation and get raw emotional and be willing to transform yourself when you walk away from the conversation. If you walk into the conversation just to observe and go, oh, that's very nice and interesting, with no intention of actually changing anything, then it's pointless. You won't evolve, right?
Well, I mean, it's all right, I'll go out on the limb here and sort of, you know, speak and say, like, this always, I know for me, this is always feels a very dangerous territory, right? Like, I know in many ways, there are lots of ways I can get myself in lots and lots of trouble. But I also know, and I've internalized a certain statement. I'd love your reaction to it, that, you know, racism, discrimination like this is a white people problem in that we created it to build a power structure. And in a way, it's our problem to dismantle. I don't like that as an engineer, because I always look and say, like, I want as many hands as possible working on a problem, and I want as many perspectives. But there feels like a reality to that. So when I say this, like, you know, like, I had you on because, you know, your profile lists it as diversity is something you want to talk about, versus I looked at your profile and said, you're a Black man. But at the same time, I also know, like, there's a reality there that we have to talk about of different perspectives. What's your reaction to those statements? Am I totally off base? Am I looking at it wrong?
Well, it's a progression. So I think there's certainly, well, there's two sides to this. I think the, you being the white male, certainly there is white society needs to look at itself and say, why are we the way we are? And in this, a lot of this applies to the United States, right? Like when you go to Africa, it's not about black and white. It's about tribals and various other slices. And it's about women versus men. But in the U.S., you know, we recognize that, well, this country and your advantage has been built up over the 200 years on the backs of certain other people who were oppressed, right? That's just the fact. That's right. What this country is. Some people can come to grips with that. Some people can't. Now, you're not going to be able to dismantle it. It's too ingrained in the system. Now, you can be enlightened and you can go forward and you can say, I'm going to try my best not to perpetuate that advantage. But you're not going to give away your millions of dollars to black people. It's just not going to happen, right? So that's one side is great. Become aware. That's great because then your children have a better chance of living off that same subjugation. Now, you don't want them to end up in the gutter. Right? And you're going to fight like heck to not have that happen. And you will, in fact, use your advantage like anyone would. The other side of it is my people have to get off the hand, you know, the hand that's feeding them. We're not going to get our 40 acres and a mule again. And this is why I, as a black guy in tech, who've kind of made my I've been successful. It's up to me to reach out to my community and say, hey, we can do this. I'm going to help. I'm not going to just go off to the beach and say, well, good luck, right? I'm standing on the backs of the people who fought to get me into a position where I could have whatever advantage I do have. So it's up to me to pay it forward for my people as well. So so it's a two-edged thing there. Not two-edged. There's two components. It's not all on you. You can only do so much, right? I, for my part, have to do my part, right? And I'll say it like this. I had this conversation with one of our VPs after the George Floyd thing. And I said, I don't need you to give me handouts. I need you to just get your foot off my neck, right? I'll do the rest. Just get your foot off my neck. Right? It's as simple as that. I'm not coming for what's yours. We're going to create more stuff. There's enough stuff for everybody, but just get your foot off my neck. Right.
Well, I always quip, and this is a silly sort of statement, but it helps me think about it. Love is not pie, right? And opportunity shouldn't be pie.
Right. There's plenty to go around.
And by the way, if we invest in it, we make more.
Right.
and making more is generally what we're all trying to do as business owners too, right? Like I want to create something out of nothing. So having it grow should be good. If I'm giving you some and you're also growing it, then the whole thing gets bigger. And that's
right. People think in zero sum game, right? It's like, well, if I give you some, then I'm not going to get some. It's like, no. If you give me some, we all get more.
Right. So I want this to be a bit of a conversation. I'm going to pause and sit try and ask, like, well, what would you ask me in this situation? Like, what is the kind of question back that helps drive this conversation?
Well, there's probably two different kinds of questions. One is a very blunt, rude question, which is, well, how much advantage do you need to succeed? I mean, how much more do you need? Right? It's like when you look at something like VC money, less than 2 or 3% lands in the hands of women and minorities. 97% is not women and minorities. How much more advantage do you need? Right. So that's one question. And it's perhaps just rhetorical and inflammatory. But the real question is, it's not a question. It's can we have a dialogue? Will you talk to me? Can we work together on figuring stuff out? And will you hire me? Right? Will you give me a chance? That's the simple question. Will you give me a chance? And I say it as simply as that because I've told this story before. Like when I was growing up, my brother and I doing the Silicon Valley thing, people wouldn't even give us a chance. They wouldn't allow us to open a bank account. They wouldn't, VCs just straight up said, we're not going to give your kind of people money, you know? And then there's codified things like redlining and all this other sorts of stuff, which are strictly like, you're not getting this, right? So the question is, will you give me an honest chance, right? It's as simple as that. And then the rest is dialogue, because then you can say, well, this is why I'm not giving you a chance. Like, well, let's work that out. Why won't you give me a bank account? I'm not asking for money. I'm just asking for a bank account.
Right.
Right. Why won't you do this? What is holding you back? What are your fears? What are your anxieties? Can we get past that? Those are the kinds of questions I would ask.
I mean, I almost feel like that is exactly the place to leave this for people to think about, because that question for anybody in this space, that's what to think about. So, William, I really...
Yeah, and well, just to put a fine point on it is, what are you afraid of?
Yeah, and I think...
That's it.
That's the question that I want to leave everyone listening with. So, William, thanks for joining me today. I really, really appreciate it.
You're welcome. This is fantastic.
Remember, if you like this kind of content, you can support it directly. Visit patreon.com/MSP Radio for our Give What You Want program. Every little bit helps, and we are supported directly by listeners like you. The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSP Radio or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. If you want to reach our listeners, visit mspradio.com/engage.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.
Hey there, Brenda.
It's Carol.
Exactly. So which leg are we operating on?
You mean arm?
It's all connected.
Asking the right question can greatly impact your future.
Are you sure you're an orthopedist?
Actually, I'm a Sagittarius.
Especially when it comes to your finances.
Do you have a question? Are you a certified financial planner?
Yes, I'm a CFP professional.
CFP professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's gotta be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Meet Gail. Her thing is being a supermom. And supermom has a lot on her super-sized plate.
Ain't that the truth.
But at Walmart Pharmacy, supermom recently got her whole family updated on all their vaccines.
We knocked it out during a grocery run. No appointment.
That's next-level supermom. From pneumonia to shingles, HPV, and more, get no-cost vaccinations from an expert pharmacist where you already shop. Welcome to an easier pharmacy. Welcome to your Walmart. $0 copay with most insurances. State age and health restrictions may apply.
At KPMG, we make the difference. It's not just something we say. It's what we do. Our professionals believe in the value of collaboration and the power of technology. We work closely with clients to uncover insights that illuminate opportunity, develop bold solutions that innovate industries, and create better outcomes driven by data. Brighter insights. Bolder solutions. Better outcomes. It's how our people make the difference, driving growth and value for our clients. KPMG. Make the difference.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.